Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round's champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, this is former NHL referee Carey Fraser. I'm here at Nasty Knuckles. Please join us with Riles and Nasty.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your hosts, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What's happening, Nasty?
What's up, Regarelia? What are you doing there, brother?
Just hanging out, man. Checking out that new jersey you're rocking.
Oh, dude.
You got going on there.
I thank Steve Russo and Matt Denucci. Their roller hockey team a couple weeks ago, as you know, called and wanted us to sponsor their team, use the logo, and they did a what they called a Miami Vice type unis. They're really
love cool. It. Super cool.
Yeah, I really like them. They have the Philly skyline and everything, and it was really nice, and they made us a couple, so I felt like I should rock it today. They kind of took the Miami
well played.
Down there in Miami, the Heat, they wear a Miami Vice is what they call it, style jersey. I don't know if it's on the weekends or just one night a week, but anyway, that's where they got the idea. The kids came up with it, man. They're super cool.
So
I felt like I'd rock it for the boys. They came up a little short. They lost in the boys and girls. They came up just a little short in the finals there, but they'll be playing some more this summer. They have a few more tournaments. So we are going to get out to a couple of them, you and I, and support them. We made some really cool t-shirts and hats as well that will be up on the site. Also, I just really like the colors. Had a lot of people coming in the shop, and they love the colors that we put together on those shirts and hats. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And, looks good.
Yeah, man. Love it. I have another team that has reached out and wants to have us sponsor their team coming up soon, and just putting the jerseys together now, man. They look pretty cool, but I'll save that till they're done.
Oh, yeah.
But
you going
anyway,
retro? Throwback?
Since we last talked, the playoffs, you know, we're in the second round now, and been a little bit of a shit show in some of these series.
No doubt.
Florida, just, you know, man, I don't even know what to say about that series. I did not see it going that way.
I did not see that coming. But Tampa knows how to win, man. I'll tell you, they shows you they just know how to win.
They know how to win, and it's amazing that every year they put in different pieces. But I tell you, they're doing their homework, man. That Matthew Darche, he's assistant in there, and they're putting in the homework. I mean, they're fourth line. I think we've talked about it, but with Belly, Patty Maroon, and Corey Perry. Corey Perry had 20 goals this year, man.
I know. What an addition. I feel like if you're a GM that passed up on a veteran, you know, physical presence like that.
Yeah.
It's such a great pickup. Such a grinder.
Man, it's amazing to me. And he's got I want to say he's got 4 or 5 goals in the playoffs. I could be one off, but I should have probably checked that before we jumped on. But anyway, Patty Maroon scoring another big goal the other night. I hated to see Florida go out. I had said before with you that I felt like Bob was the key. Bob was lights out in my mind.
I know, right? Yeah, I agree. It wasn't.
But some of those goals. If people don't believe this Vasilevsky is the best goalie in the world, after what he just did, I know guys missed open nets, but I mean, they did have a lot of shots, and this guy just turned it up at a level. And
yeah,
he looks like he can't be scored on. I mean, legitimately looks like he cannot be scored on, but
yeah,
you just have to give Tampa credit, man. They know how to win. And you know,
I agree.
The thing that I thought really killed Florida obviously was the play at the end of the game with about 3 seconds ago, and both D-men go behind the net.
What a brain fart.
Jason Kucherov, like, what could you be thinking there?
Oh, my God. Just a meltdown. Breakdown completely.
I literally, my mouth was wide open. I could not believe what I saw, and I feel terrible. I think it was Montour, wasn't it, that went flying behind the net? If I'm wrong there, Travis, just scratch that. But anyway, that was hard. But you lose a game like that. I mean, that's as bad as losing a triple overtime game to me.
Yeah.
Losing 2 seconds to go in a game.
Oh, yeah.
That's playoffs even, you know.
Crushing. So
I was worried for them then after that because I'm like, if they get through this and grab a win here, it's obviously a totally different series, but did not happen.
So, nope.
Fortunately, Florida, it seems like always Riggs, if you really look at it. I wonder what the percentages are. We'll have to get Baller on that for the President Trophy winning team to win the cup. How many times that actually happens?
Yeah, that'd be an interesting one. You know, I have no clue.
A regular season, scoring 4+ goals a game. They could not score on this guy, man.
I know.
Score on Vasilevsky. It was amazing.
Yeah. No, I know. Top to bottom, Tampa, you know, they're just built to win. You know, they have the experience. They've done it before. But I feel like you said it earlier, every offseason, they're replacing some pieces, but equally as productive as the pieces they're replacing. And, you know, you got the goaltending, you got the scoring, you got the physical play. Like, you know, every part of the game, experience all the way down the line. So, I mean – it's incredible. I did not see that coming. You said it. I mean, I don't think anybody saw it coming. I thought it was even more of a dogfight, honestly.
Yeah.
But man,
you know, Tampa, I think Riles, and this is totally just my opinion. I felt like before game one, I was watching the pregame, and I listened to Vermette, coach, and he was talking about how the year before they were so wound up about playing Tampa and the rivalry that had started with these two teams. I felt like that first game, they were way too relaxed. It's the playoffs. You got to get in people's faces. You got to try and piss them off. Watching, I would say, a preseason game, but at the beginning of the season, if you remember, these two teams played, and it was like a playoff game. They were fighting. Right. I just felt like Florida didn't have that energy, and I know they don't have a lot of toughness, but like it took them.
Well, that was probably it. It was like, you know, like Tampa was probably waiting for it because you know they got the muscle. Florida can't really play that way.
It just, to me, that first game, I was like, man, it just lacked emotion to me for a playoff game of two teams that actually have created a rivalry there in Florida, which is
Sure.
But anyway, moving on, Carolina, and Carolina wins their first two
games.
That
one's heating up.
They snuck them out, though. They were big win. Rangers come back and answer. hold serve.
Yeah, that one's heating up, though, getting a little more physical.
Yep.
And, well, Revo was getting a little more aggressive. We got to see him and D'Angelo going after
it. I love it, man. I really do.
Man,
I know, like, you hate him or you love him, whatever it is, but he's not an overly big guy, which you know. But
no, he's got balls, man.
Down. He doesn't back down. And I kind of like what Gallant said the other day. You know, where he was talking about it after. He doesn't like all the yapping, but to me, it makes it interesting when those guys are in
sure.
debate, and you can see how much they care and how much they want to win. But him saying that we have the guys to answer that.
We got the guys, yeah.
Revo.
For
yes,
sure.
You do.
Yeah.
Carolina, it's probably true, too. You correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, their toughest guy probably is D'Angelo. Like, he can fight. Now, he doesn't.
Oh, yeah, he can. Yeah.
But
he can fight. Yeah, I've seen him fight before. He's a scrappy dude, but that would be a bad trade-off anyways. I'm not sure that would be overly beneficial for
100%, 100%.
Carolina. But yeah, you just don't play into that hand, you know, because you're not going to win. That part of it.
Sherrod's laid some guys out with Sidney Crosby and Gott Domi the other night, and I honestly don't think it was purposely. Domi was kind of losing his edge, but it is kind of funny how Truba's had two headshots that, you know, I thought the one on Sid could have been a penalty. Everyone was going back and forth about that. That's neither here nor there now, but the series is interesting now. Going back to Carolina, it's
going
to
be
to watch. And we got to talk about Chief, the Blues in Colorado. That Colorado team, man, they're just
so good.
Hard to stop, you know?
Yeah.
And Kadri's – this time I think Kadri's innocent. I was actually talking to Chief this morning, and, you know, he didn't say anything bad. He just was like, you know, this guy's having a series. He's under people's skin. That's what he does. But to me, the play on Bennington, I really don't think he had any intention on – hurting him or even
I agree.
Really running him.
Yeah. So. I've seen way worse. I agree with you. To me, that was a strong hockey play. The puck was right there for the taking. Their defender bumped him, clearly somewhat. Was there a bit of embellishment? Maybe. Who knows? But to me, I've seen way worse. I was honest play than that. It wasn't a deliberate run. But it fueled him up. I mean, he's more involved in the series. I know he's getting death threats and all this other stuff. All this crazy stuff going on, but I mean, he's effective. He's involved. I hate to play against guys like that because you want to take your heads off. But
did you see what he was doing his interview? And I guess Benner threw a water bottle at him.
Oh yeah, I did see that.
Better to throw.
Like, yeah, I know, right?
Ball or something. I don't
message
know.
Sending. Yeah, message sender. The old water bottle toss.
The way they made it sound, and I obviously we weren't there to see it, but. You know, Kadri's doing his interview, and he kind of like looks over. He goes, "I think
you kind of laughed too, didn't he?"
But what do you do? Throw it and run? Like, what?
I thought Kadri laughed from the one I saw. Anyways, he smiled.
Yeah.
Good try, buddy.
Yeah, I like I said, I talked to Chief this morning. I said you gotta find a way to steal another game there on the road and just take it one at a time. Obviously, everybody knows that, so it's gonna be tough job. Going in there, that team is they're scary, man.
Oh yeah.
But the Battle of Alberta.
Wow.
Edmonton with the upper hand. I'm not gonna lie. I didn't see that happening. It's not over. Obviously, you got to go back to Calgary now and play tomorrow. But the hit on Smitty by Lucic.
Oh yeah.
I guess you could call it a hit. But I really didn't think. He ran him, quote unquote, ran him. And my favorite part about that was, well, one, that Smitty wasn't hurt. It was great.
Right.
But Daryl Sutter after the game and his post games, you know, they're so good. They asked him about it and he goes, oh, he got a charging penalty, right? I think that's what he said. And they were like, yeah, he goes, could you imagine if Luch actually charged him? And I'm like, that's so true. I really didn't think that.
Destroyed him.
A 5-minute major. I really did not. I thought he helped. He did bump into him. those are those things, you know, everybody talks about the goalie coming out of the crease. I know you can't run the goalie, but Smitty comes out. Smitty, actually, for a goalie, he's one of the toughest, most physical goalies. He kind of looks for it. He always has his whole career. We've told stories about it before. I remember when he was younger, he was a little crazier. But he's playing well, man. And you know, he didn't get hurt, thank goodness. But I think usually Smitty would jump up and try to drop the mitts, but it was
so Luch. The Luch, you know, yeah. Luch was coming in hot, man. Luch was moving well. He was coming in on the forecheck, man. He's moving the pins and squeezed through the crease.
I just think if he really wanted to hit him, he could.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that, man. He would destroy him.
But I just didn't expect that to be a 5-minute. And the one other thing I forgot to bring up quickly, and it has nothing to do with anything now, was the Hagel hit against Florida. I thought that was a gutless play. I don't think the kid's a dirty player, but for that not to get a 5-minute with a guy off balance going to the boards, he's less than 4 feet away from the boards, and to give him a nudge like that, that could have been ugly.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Well, the game happens fast, and I don't think he did it purposely, but I definitely thought that was more than a 2-minute penalty. But, you know, I'm not a ref, and that's just what it is. But anyway.
We look like one.
Oh, I told you what I want to do. I want to umpire one game in MLB at first base, just so when they do a routine out, you know, second base, throw to first. I just want to do that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want
to punch. Nice and casual,
just,
right?
I love when they do that, when they just give it a go.
Yeah,
but, nice and I don't soft, want to be nice and gentle. That's for sure.
No way. Yeah, I know, right?
Thank our Cue guest
that one up.
Week, Mr. Carey Fraser, should be in the NHL Hall of Fame as a referee.
Absolutely.
One day he will be, but man, we could have had him here for hours with the stories he has, and good dude, and we really appreciate him coming in. It was awesome.
Absolutely. To get him again in the studio for 2.0, because you said it. I mean, the stories, we didn't even crack the seal on those bad boys.
I know.
You're sitting there for days.
I know, we did.
So, like, ready to rock, episode 75, NAST.
Let's do it.
Presented to you by our good friends at Curaleaf, curaleaf.com, medical marijuana dispensary in Pennsylvania. Check them out. Let's go, NAST.
Let's do it.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are so happy to have Mr. Carey Fraser. What's up, Carey? How are you, man?
Boys, I got to tell you, it's good to see you. I have flashbacks when I see faces of guys that I was involved with throughout my 30-year NHL career. And as soon as I saw you, it was like Riles hitting the freaking speed bag, heavy bag, and working out with a fight trainer. And you running around, you know, equipment guys need this, need that. Nasty, where are you?
Yeah,
you were always found though. They usually found me.
I was buzzing around, probably doing
ADHD
nothing.
ADHD kicking in.
Yeah, exactly. Just hyper as hell.
Still doing the same thing around here.
Yeah, exactly.
Quick showers, disappearing. Couldn't find him this morning.
Yoga.
Yeah.
That's all he does. That's all he does. So he gives me shit all the time. But we are so thankful to have you here, man. You are a busy, busy man. You have so much going on. Young man, getting ready to turn 70.
Yeah.
Years young. Yeah. You don't look it at all.
Keep the feet moving.
Yep, you do. And you have a lot of stuff going on. We're going to talk about it today. But, man, my first thing, I've known you a long time. I've been fortunate enough to be friends with you and your family and your kids. And now your son-in-laws even. Yeah. But Gano, dude, like, I want to golf. Like, take me golfing, bro. But this guy's everywhere. But anyway, I was just going to ask you right away is, like, when did your love of hockey start, and when did you realize you wanted to be a referee?
Well, first of all, I'm a Canadian, eh? And so my dad played pro hockey. He was in the International Hockey League. He played in Scotland when he was 19 years old in the Scottish International Hockey League. They were all Canadian guys. They had a tryout at Toronto Maple Leaf Gardens, and my dad grew up with Bill Barilko, who was a Toronto Maple Leaf.
Disappeared.
Killed in the plane crash after scoring the winning goal to win the Stanley Cup for the Leafs. So Dad stayed at Bill's place and the tryout
thing. That's amazing.
He made the team, made the league, and they went over on a ship, and he played in Falkirk for a year. I may have some relatives over there as a result. I'm not sure. Maybe siblings. I don't know. But he, you know, with the last name Fraser, he's got that Scottish ancestry that we all have. So I was skating when I was 15 months old. As soon as I could walk, I would go to Dad's practices, and the trainer would put my skates on, and I'd go out, and I had a stick that held up. As soon as I could walk, I was banging a puck in our kitchen. And we lived with, took care of my my great-grandfather, and he had a cane, and he was the goalie. So I was like a year old, and I'm whacking pucks at him and balls. And so the love of the game as a Canadian is instilled in us. We grew up on backyard rinks. I played AAA All-Star Hockey from Pee Wee, Bantam, Midget, and then went on to play junior. I finished playing junior A as the captain of the Sarnia team. Mark Howe was the last player that I played against that played in the NHL.
Wow.
He was with the Detroit Junior Red Wings. His mom, Colleen, was the general manager of the team, and Billy Day was the coach, former Red Wing. So I was a good little player. My dad was also a boxer, Riley.
No way.
Yeah, and he was really a tough guy. Forearms like Popeye. He had the anchors on them. And so he taught me how to fight when I was 12 years old in our kitchen. And he'd knock me down, and he'd say, "You got to keep your hands up. Keep your hands up." And boom, I'd go down. He'd just, you know, open palm slap me down. And I got it. I finally got it. And I was a lefty. And I had bony hands, and I could cut guys, and I hated bullies. Absolutely hated bullies. So we were playing AAA Midget. We had five guys on our team that went on to play in the NHL. Wayne Merrick was a four-time Stanley Cup winner. We had Bob Neely, first pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs on D. He was 6 foot at that time playing midget. So we had some really good players. And we were playing in this, you'll love this, we were playing in the aftermath of the Silver Stick Tournament for midget players. It was called the Silver Blades. We're playing in Port Huron, McMoran Arena. We're in the final. We're playing against this Michigan team, and they had a big guy on defense that was dirty, and he was sticking our guys. And Dad, the coach, said, "Boys, be disciplined, be disciplined. We're going to win the game, win the game." So no penalties. Okay, so 5 minutes left with all these big guys on the team. Taps me on the shoulder. He said, "Go teach that big guy a lesson." I could fight better scared than they could mad, typically.
Yeah.
And you know, it's easier to punch up than it is down.
Yeah.
So I speed bagged this guy with both hands, cut him over both eyes. We get thrown out of the game. I'm in the dressing room. The guys come in. We win the championship. Everybody's excited. And I hear this argument out in the hallway. And I hear my dad's voice. And he slipped in the dressing room, locked the door. He came over. He put his arm around me. He said, "Listen, Kerry," he said, "I'm really proud of the way you took care of that kid." He said he needed to be taught a lesson. He was dirty, and he's a bully. He said, "While you took the kid, I don't think you can take his mother. She's out there waiting for you."
Come on.
Well, it gets better.
Listen, Mom.
He said, "I'm serious. We got to get you out of here. She's not leaving. She's waiting for you to come out."
Oh,
I said,
man.
"Okay, well, what do we do?" He said, "You see that stick bag? I weigh 115 pounds.
Come on.
Get in the stick bag." The old man threw me over his shoulder, zipped me up, and away we go. Walked past the mother.
Wow.
That is amazing.
She was checking all the faces of my teammates.
Oh, impressive.
That's amazing.
Well, how old were you then?
I was midgets, 15, 16.
Yeah.
So I go away to play junior. I went to Hamilton Red Wings. Eddie Bush was coaching there. And I went through training camp, and I was too small. I was like 122 pounds. I really beefed up that summer.
Yeah, well, 7 pounds.
You wasn't on that plan you were on, Rouse. You were playing.
I didn't do the yoga,
though. The seafood diet,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to make the team, but he wanted me to be around. So he said, "I'm from Collingwood, and they're starting a new junior B team up there, the Collingwood Blues. I'd like to send you there." I said, "Okay, I'll go." So first game, we're playing the Kitchener Rangers. I'm looking back for a pass. Chris Ahrens, who draft pick of the Minnesota North Stars, big defenseman. He was close to 6 foot at that point. And he elbowed me right in the head. And you got 2 minutes for elbowing. I'm deer in the headlights. I'm staggering back to the bench. Shake the cobwebs out. I went, holy jeez. First shift, first game. I got to do something about this. They had a bigger guy than Aaron's on defense. And I went out and fought him, and I beat him. Again, punching up. And so when a little guy beats a big guy, it's embarrassing, right?
It's, it's almost for them, it's a lose-lose,
yeah,
right? Because exactly. If he does beat you, look at you.
Yeah.
You
know,
but well, he wanted a second round because he wasn't going to settle with the fact that he got beat, and I beat him again. And I thought, man, this is great. I'm going to go through the league and get the big guys. And I did pretty good. And they left me alone.
Wow, a little street cred, right?
Yeah,
the word went out.
Yeah.
I was just up in Collingwood for their Hall of Fame induction thing, and I was their keynote speaker, and it was great to reconnect with some of the guys. I only lived there 1 year, but, man, you know how certain locations have a real impact on you? And at 17, first time away from home, and so one of the guys that was playing for St. Thomas from up there, he said, I told our tough guy when we went to St. Thomas to play, he said, watch out for that guy. Like, leave him alone. He's a lefty. So we ended up getting in a fight, and I really gave it to this guy. So he said, we're sitting in the dressing room, and he said, one of our other guys said, hey, Rick, can you give us a tip on anybody else that is out there on that team that can fight? And we had Frank Beaton on our team, right? Frankie played in the World Hockey, and they called him Frank Never Been Beaten until he lost one, and then it was seldom beaten. So he didn't know, the guys didn't know about him because the guy said, yeah, give us a tip so we don't get our ass kicked like our tough guy.
Yeah, right?
That's great.
Anyway, how did I become a referee? Nobody ever wants to be a referee. I had a whole bunch of Division I U.S. scholarship offers at the end of my last year. Undrafted, little guy. Ted Garvin, who played pro with my dad, was coaching Port Huron in the IHL and went on to coach the Detroit Red Wings for a bit. And Ted changed my diapers. He saw me as a kid. And he said, listen, you're a good little player. You play tough. You're not going to make the NHL. And you can play in our league and you can probably play in the American League, but the way you play, you're going to get hurt. He said, why don't you get into officiating? And he handed me a brochure to a referee school. This is 1972. World Hockey coming in, opportunity for players for all aspects of the game. So I filled in this brochure, paid $250 for a 5-day camp up in Halliburton, north of Toronto. After day four, I refereed 10 minutes of a intermediate league quality game. Get off, and I didn't know what I was doing, guys, honest to God. I mean, but I could skate, and I understood the game as a player. So I get off the ice, and Mr. Frank Udvary, Hockey Hall of Fame referee, assistant director of officiating, meets me in the officials room. He said, Kerry, listen, I really like what I saw, and I'd like to invite you to NHL training camp for officials.
Wow.
He said, but it's going to happen in like 3 days, so I got to check with Scotty Morrison, referee-in-chief, to see if there's room for you. I get home from Halliburton, wee hours of the morning on Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, I get a phone call, Frank Udvary. Yep, we got you all set. There's room for you. We want you to come on Sunday. You report at the Hilton on Airport Road in Toronto, 6 o'clock. And this is what you bring. It's a 10-day camp, so be prepared. Great. I'm excited, right? I'm going to the NHL officials camp, and I'd never refereed a game in my life.
Amazing, man. She's amazing.
So I'm so excited. I pack all my stuff, and I'm ready, and I want to get there, you know, early. I don't want to be late. So 3 o'clock in the morning, I drive from my hometown in Sarnia, 180 kilometers, 150 miles or so to Toronto. I get to the front desk. I'm all proud, and 20 years old, chest puffed out. Kerry Fraser here for the NHL referees training camp. The night clerk looked at me and said, man, he said, you're here awful early. We thought you were coming in at 6 o'clock tonight.
Oh, no.
I got the 6 o'clock part. But
it was PM. Rooks, yeah.
what an experience.
Oh, my God.
Think about your rookie time at an NHL team camp, right?
Yeah.
And you look around that room and you see all these guys. And, like, I never paid attention to referees, but I knew who some of these veterans were. And I, as a rookie and as a player, I knew enough to keep my mouth shut and my ears open, and I'd learn a lot. So the game was brutal back then. We're talking 72. This is Broad Street Bullies. Right. This is, you know, the
stick work.
Bench clearing balls, the whole deal. Yeah. You mentioned stick work. So we were going through the rule book, rule by rule by rule, after in the afternoon, after a, you know, robust on ice sessions. And so there was a rule back then for spearing. The ref could assess a 2-minute penalty or a 5-minute penalty for spearing. So I'm sitting beside Lloyd Gilmore, who did the Russian game in Philadelphia when the Russians left the ice.
Oh, right. Wow. Yeah, we had Lou Nolan in a few weeks ago, and he was telling us that
Lloyd
story.
Hardly called any penalties, right?
Right.
So I said, excuse me, Mr. Gilmore, I'm sitting beside him. I said, what's the difference between a 2-minute penalty and a 5-minute penalty for spearing? He said, well, kid, if you see the stick go in, it's 2 minutes. If you see it come out the back, it's 5 minutes.
What an answer, though. Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was Lloyd.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny you said he didn't call a lot of penalties. He called a delay a game on the Russian before when Mr. Snyder went to get him. He ended up giving them a penalty. Lou thought that was hilarious because of the hard, you know, hit on Ed Van Emp.
Yeah.
Hit the guy.
Flyers had a bench-clearing brawl. Lloyd's referee in the game. Scotty Morrison called him. He said, Lloyd. You had a bench-clearing brawl. He said, you only called 2 minor penalties for roughing. What the hell's going on?
He didn't want to do all the...
No, too much paperwork.
Yeah. He wants to go to the bar.
Yeah, he wants to go to the bar. That's amazing. We could have you on here all day and night, man, for this, everything you've seen. It really is amazing. I mean, you know, you did the World Cup of Hockey. You've done everything. 96, you did 98 in Nagano, the Olympics. But, man, like, it's your job that you had and these jobs that these officials have. I'm telling you, man, it's a tough.
It's got to be a toughest job.
It's so hard, and I'll give my one little thing. When I was in college, when I was younger, I lived right beside High Point University, and it was a coach there that coached the basketball program, and he gave me a job when I was 13. He basically made it up because he knew I loved basketball, and I was kind of a basketball player, and I worked I gave, like, people came to me to get Cokes or, you know, like, whatever. Right. The
towel boy?
Whatever. No. What is the word I'm looking for? Sorry, you got to cut this.
Ball boy.
Edit it. No, I was running the concession stand.
Oh, right.
So that's what I did.
To the juice boy.
I was basically juice boy, but I actually sold things. But when you go for your first year in college as a player, then you become a referee at his camps. So it was all college guys reffing these. He had 8 weeks of team camps. I'm telling you, it's the hardest, and it's a different sport. I get it, but you're watching one thing. Something can happen over here. You got a coach losing their mind. You got players losing their mind.
Distraction after distraction.
I loved working there because it was cash, and it was, you know, I was in college, and I was getting to be in the court every day.
Right.
I just don't envy anything, and you are at the highest level. I'm talking about like high school kids, but it's a tough job. I mean,
well, you know what? I had to grow into it. As I mentioned, I didn't have any experience, so my experience was on the job learning.
Right.
And let's think about our personalities. Okay, we when we get to this stage in our life, when we're finding a breakout, and we're involved in a professional something, and all of the things that we acquired from our home environment, talking to my dad's kind of training stuff, and the schoolyard and our competitive sports, all the way up, and now all of a sudden we're in this role that we've been prepared for. So, as I mentioned, I didn't like bullies. I had courage, and I could take care of myself. Now, I'm all of a sudden cast in a different role. I've got to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the armbands. I've got the authority. My very first game with Wayne Gretzky in Northlands Coliseum, I learned a huge amount about me and that I was going to fail if I didn't alter those things that boil inside you that come out in a reflex.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was Bobby Clark and the Flyers were playing. And it was 1980 in Northlands Coliseum. I dropped the puck, and Wayne gets touched within 10 seconds, and he took a dive on me, jumped in the air, and he's looking sideways at me to see if my arm's up before he even hit the ice. Now, we didn't have a diving penalty back then. So, and my little man syndrome, type A personality, Napoleon kind of attitude, I thought, okay, Bucko, you're going to play your game, this game on your knees. Your equipment is going to be more wet on the outside than it will be on the inside. I called nothing on him. And that certainly helped Clarkie in the
Yeah, sure.
So with a minute and a change left and the Flyers up by one goal, they're pressing that great, you know, young Hall of Fame, future Hall of Famers were the Oilers. And Pelle Lindbergh, God rest his soul, caught the puck. I blew the whistle, stop play. Behind the net, where Wayne's office was, he jumped in the air, he threw his hands out, feet out, boom, did a belly flop. Clarkie skated over to him with no teeth. He said, "Get up, Gretzky, you fucking baby." I went over and I said, "I hope I can say that on your
podcast." Oh, of course, fine.
So I apologize because I don't curse. Anyway, so I go over to Wayne. I said, "Wayne, what are you doing?" I said, "There wasn't a guy within 15 feet of you." He said, "You wouldn't have called it anyway. You haven't called an effing thing all night." I said, "You're right. I'm going to start right now." Boom, you got two for
us. No way.
He said, "Thanks. It's about effing time you called something." And he stormed off the ice to the restroom.
Oh, my God.
That is classic.
Now, boys, there's a message in this. I replay. I've got a memory like a steel trap.
You do.
It's like a VCR. I can replay a play, and it's exact. So after a few pops, I go back to the hotel, and I'm replaying. What could I have done better tonight? And it hit me like a plank. I compromised my personal integrity, the rules, the people I work for, the game I love. I was dishonest. And I knew. Now, I had to figure out, why did that happen? How did I get involved emotionally with a player? And I recognized that all that stuff that I acquired over time was a trigger. It was a reflex. Don't like bullies. Don't like to people to intimidate me. The crowd was on me.
Yep.
The more I didn't call, the more they're on me.
Right.
And I stuck it up his butt that night. And I knew I had to be better because if I didn't, I was going to fail. The next time I saw Wayne Gretzky, I apologized to him before the game. I said, "Listen, I was really wrong. I'm sorry. I got to be better than that." But I finished with saying, "Please do me a favor. If you're fouled, I'll make the call. I think my judgment's okay. And if you have a problem, let's communicate." From that moment, there was a seed planted, and I recognized I had to do that with everybody. I had to develop relationships that were professional within the game. And to this day, I mean, I've got guys on my speed dial that, you know, legends.
Right.
And it's because we developed a good working relationship, even to the point of some guys I helped out, the two guys that hated me the most. One was Knuckles Nyland, Chris Nyland, had issues. We were on a tour together, and I helped him at a time when he needed some help.
That's awesome.
And he still hated me at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to ask you that. That's the thing, like, growing up with your hockey background playing, and I mean, all of us, you're a competitive guy. I play golf with you. Like, I understand. Like, it's got to be hard. Like you said, you're like, "Oh, okay," because you have pride, too. But you're also competitive.
Yeah.
You know, and I could see why when refs do snap, like when I was on the bench for all those years, like I don't know how they don't snap before that sometimes.
Yeah, right.
And you know, even there's going to be mistakes, we're all human. Sure. And that's the thing is the worst is, you know, like when a guy knows there's been a mistake made, but like, and it's going to happen.
Admit it.
That's exactly it.
It's going to happen. And I love what you said there too. Like you communicated. I know as you can speak as a player, but I just know hearing the players in the locker room. Oh, good, we've got Carey tonight. At least he'll fucking talk to you.
Yeah,
you know, if he calls, he's gonna at least. Until you start giving him the hey, go fuck yourself. Yeah. He's gonna be fuck yourself.
Exactly.
Well, that's
you can't blame you.
No, like, and I'm not gonna give him a penalty.
Right, and then there's some refs. I won't mention names because I like to keep friends. But there's some that have come up in the last few years that. A guy just trying to talk.
And that's through insecurity.
Yeah.
When a guy doesn't want to talk or when he gets over the top aggressive and starts F-bombing a player, it's because he's not comfortable.
Yeah.
He's not comfortable with his own skin. But I learned another very valuable lesson as I signed a contract and now they send me to the minor leagues. And Danny Gare was playing out west and I have this game and they're lighting it up. They're the visiting team. Home team's getting scored on. The fans are frustrated. The players are frustrated. They're losing big time. Every time a guy, you know, another goal scored, fans littered the ice. Player'd come up, shoot his mouth off. I'd bang him with a misconduct, you know, no tolerance. And I had them sitting three deep in the penalty box towards the third end of the third period. Finally, with another goal scored, another misconduct, and more shit thrown on the ice, the coach sent his captain over. Wanted to talk to me. Very politely, he said, "Mr. Referee, my coach wants to know if he can get a penalty for thinking." I said, "Well, if he doesn't think out loud, he's probably going to be okay." The captain said, "Well, in that case, he thinks you're a fucking asshole."
No. Come on.
Come on.
So good.
I started laughing.
Yeah, how do you
so
not?
Good.
How do you so not? I look over at the coach. He's got his foot up on the bench. And he's got the scowl, and he smiled, and then he started to laugh when he saw me laugh.
Oh, that is so funny.
And
that is funny,
I gave him a thumbs up. Yeah. Like, I thought, that's really cool.
Yeah, that was great.
So you know what I learned from that one? I go back after the game. I said, you know what, Fraze? Don't be an asshole.
Yeah, right?
Enjoy the game. Yeah. Right. Love the game. Right. Enjoy it. Have fun.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
man.
So
it's
true.
It's humbling.
So many lessons along the way.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I can imagine. Oh, my God.
Well, those are big lessons, too. I mean, for you to ref 30 years in the NHL, communication's got to be the top of the list of preserving, right, your integrity.
You know,
I do
a lot of corporate speaking, and the lessons that I learned are transferable.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's communication, developing communicative skills, especially mine was in a hostile environment.
Right.
So that can transfer to sales, to
sure,
you know, all kinds of different things in industry. Safety is another element that, you know, in industry is really important. So you want to get home at night.
Yeah.
I remember I was game in the Spectrum, and I was following the play. The play changed, and it's coming out of the Flyer zone. All of a sudden, Richie Dunn, the defenseman, intercepts a puck at the red line, and I'm 15 feet from him going this way towards him, and he's winding up for a slap shot. I start going back, yeah. But he pounds it. It hits me right between the legs.
No.
Yeah, shattered my cup.
Oh,
it shattered.
No.
I'm on my back.
I guess so.
Jimmy McCrossin came out. I said, "Jimmy, I think it just poked through the end of my cup."
No.
He said, "Well, Kerry, there's two things we can do here." He said, "I can lift your legs and try and pump them to get your balls to fall down again. But," he said, "otherwise I can massage them and we'll get them down quicker." I said, "Do the pump. Do the pump."
Do the pump.
So Richie Dunn skated over me and says, "Fraze, I'm really sorry." He said, "Like, I just pounded. I didn't see you." I said, "Thank God it was you shooting, Richie."
Yeah,
wow,
right,
yeah, right. Okay.
So you know what? Those are the kinds of things where fans don't realize you have fun. You know,
yeah,
you were really,
you got to.
You were a tough guy, and you had that look. All the tough guys had that look that when they're ready, it's so intense, and it's a stressful thing to fight.
Right.
I believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Especially, you know, yeah, when a little guy, I mean, holy shit, you can get hurt. But each guy that I saw, and you were no exception, knew your role. You knew what you had to do, and you knew when you had to do it to try and affect the game for your team in a positive way. So I talked to Jay Miller, who used to fight for the Boston Bruins constantly. He was a heavyweight.
Oh, yeah.
And him and Knuckles Nyland had fights every game with Montreal, Boston, always a rivalry. So I called Jay about golf on Cape Cod. He's like the mayor of Cape Cod. He said, "Kerry, long time no talk." He said, "I named my boat after you." I said, "Really? What's that?" He said, "You always used to say to me, 'Let him go.'" His boat's name, Let Him Go.
Let him go.
Hey, that's awesome.
I was going to ask you, that's awesome, because I was going to ask you, with your background, when you were growing up and you were, you know, you played a tough game, you saw a lot of fights. Was it fun for you?
I promoted some.
That's so cool.
The game needed, I thought, at certain points, when guys are yapping, you know, when the linesmen get in and the scrums and all this, and I've said, "Hey, listen, I can arrange this if you want."
Just take care of business. Really.
Yeah, like, and
enough
one,
with the talk.
One game I did, one guy says, "You want to go?" "Yeah, sure." "Linesman, get out of the way." They fought. The bench is cleared.
Oh.
I was up till 3 a.m. writing reports. Missed the bar.
That was the last time you promoted. Yeah, the last time you. No more Don King out there on the ice.
Honestly, back then, though, the element of fighting was so prevalent that it would diffuse a lot of this extra fluff that happens that refs don't want to deal with anyways, right?
Yeah.
So just go fight, kill the beef,
Yeah.
Go to the penalty box, and then we can move on in the game, right? I mean, stopping at every whistle and you having to get involved is no
I
no
always went to the press room before a game. And I got a coffee, and I got the press notes. And I went back to our room, had my underwear on before I start working out and stretching. And I would read what happened the last time with these two teams and previous. Was there any kind of – look, check the penalty minutes from the game. Was there altercations that, you know, there might be a grudge match? And so that was my preparation. And there were times I'd go into a game and or a tough guy. And I always checked the faces of the players as I skated around before the national anthem. Is a guy cut? Has he got a bandage? I don't want to get fooled. And there's times when the fighter on the team would come to me and he'd say, listen, I really can't fight tonight. My hand's bad or whatever. And I would say, okay, that's great news. I said, I'll tell the linesman, just hold off. Don't drop him. Just give us a sec because I'm going to send the linesman in there quick. You're not going to have to fight tonight.
Wow. That's cool. That's impressive.
Because, you know, like I, that, you could attest to this. Like, you know, you got guys, like you said, like I saw this guy fight so many times, American League, obviously National Hockey League. But, like, you know, in American League, they're playing three nights on the weekend. He's fighting four times. Like, you can't tell me your hands aren't just. But raw. They still do it. But that's cool that you would be like,
I wish I had the luxury of going to the ref and be like, hey, Kerry, like, can you help me out today?
So he's fighting every night. I'll never forget that night. We lost the game, and Johnny Stevens was coaching. If it was the year we won the cup, and you were sitting there, and you had both your hands in that iodine stuff with ice, you know, black eyes, and your hands were beat to shit. And I just thought, man, that's just a tough way to make a living. But
could he use carry that?
I was going to say,
you got to pay the price.
And Johnny Stevens was like, and I think it kind of embarrassed you, but Johnny walked in and goes, look at this guy. And I think Gratz had fallen. Yeah. And there were like four of the guys showed up. And the boy, we just didn't play well. The team didn't.
Yeah.
But these guys made a
carried the pail. Back then, it could change the complexion of a series.
Yes, 100%.
You know, tough guys. I always tried to develop a good, healthy relationship with the enforcers on a team, because their players, their teammates, respected them the most. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They were the guys that took care of business and looked after them, and I respected them as well. And if I had an issue, I could always go to that tough guy and say, hey, pal, do me a favor. Would you calm these guys down a little bit?
Yeah.
And there's big Jim McKenzie.
Oh, boy, he was a big man. Oh.
Big guy. He was a heavyweight.
Yep.
6'3", 225, solid, and a heavyweight fighter, but a real gentleman. Second year, he's a pro with the Hartford Whalers. Last game of the regular season is Washington and Landover in the old Cap Center. Nobody's mad. Game over. We just want to get into the playoffs, okay? So all the – and Ricky Lee was the coach of the Hartford Whalers. All the Hartford Whaler players left the ice at the Zamboni entrance where the refs went off. Stick boys, trainers, coaches, everybody except 6'3", Jim McKenzie, and me. We step off on the mat together. Jimmy looks down at me and said, hey, Kerry, if I told you to fuck off, would you give me 10? I said – Jim, what are you talking about? I said, game over, regular season over, nobody's mad. He said, I got a bonus in my contract for penalty minutes. I'm 4 PIMs short, and the coach never played me one shift. I looked up. I went, what'd you say? And the gentleman that he is quietly said, fuck off.
Fuck you,
I yelled
sir.
At him, say it like you mean it. He yelled at me, fuck off. I said, you got 10.
He said, that's great.
Thank you. And he walked to the dressing room.
That is so awesome. Cool.
I saw him at a Flyers game this year towards the end of the season. Cool. And I said, you got 10. He said, thank you.
Yeah, so cool.
That is the greatest.
I love to hear stuff my like God. That.
Now, he lied to me. He didn't. Who's going to give a guy a bonus for penalty minutes? But he was at 196. And he had to, his second year pro, he's going in, he's on a 2-year, he had to renegotiate. And he got all of his penalties majors for fighting. Knuckles would get 300 penalty minutes a year. He'd get match penalties. He'd get talking penalties. I banged him endlessly. So they would pad their penalty minutes.
Yeah.
He wanted to go in there as a bona fide heavyweight over 200
over 200 pounds. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I don't blame him. I would do something similar. I was like the old Dennis Bonvy strategy. Bones, I would just like just try and get like 300 minutes, 400 minutes. Just tell the ref to F off with five minutes to go in the game and get on the board.
See Bonvy's hands now?
Oh, I mean, they're insane.
He's like Gnarly.
Oh, yeah.
He fought so much.
Oh, my
man.
God. Did he ever?
God. We had him for a quick minute there. We got him in a deadline trade, and he was be reported to the Phantoms. That was one of my last years, I think, with the Phantoms. Oh, no, no. It, wasn't
it was before me. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. My bad. But he fought. Like, and the funny thing is, so we got to know him. And I love Bones.
Yeah, Bones.
I love
yeah,
Bones.
Great guy.
But it was so funny. Like, so he leaves the Phantoms. And I don't know if he went back to if he went to Hershey then or he went to Scranton. But, you know, he had been both places. Right. And he would come down, always say hi to me, you know. So I'm in the hallway, and I'm like, all right, Bones, what are you going to do tonight? Oh, man. No, man. I'm done, man. Look at my hands. First shift, the club, the whole cell.
He can't help himself.
He could not help himself. No, if anyone said anything to him, he was losing his mind. But I loved him. And we would just chuckle after we had him and knew him. You know, we just laughed and we watched him play. It was hard to even get mad at him.
Oh, yeah.
Guys had to fight him. I mean, obviously.
Let me give you a name. Both of you. Billy Tibbetts.
Oh, man. Oof. What an animal that guy is.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story about that. So we're getting ready for camp, and we're over at Hollydale. Phantoms are still at Hollydale. Pretty sure we're still at Hollydale, but yes, we were. And Billy Tibbetts had just played in this tournament in Boston. We had a few guys from there. And this guy goes, hey, any of you heard of this guy Billy Tibbetts? And everyone's in the room. You know, it's we're just getting ready for camp. It's like a week or two away from Flyers camp. And everybody's like, no, I never heard of him. And he goes, well, I just played against him this weekend in Boston. And this guy had an ankle bracelet on.
Yeah.
He had a whole arrest, whatever you call it, ankle. I don't know what you call it, but
yeah, right.
He was under house arrest.
Yeah. Wow.
Now, it's around his skate. I'm like, that's illegal. He can block a shot. Yeah, right. Out, right?
Yo, shot blockers.
But then whoever it was, I want to see it was Jimmy Montgomery, but it couldn't have been Jimmy Montgomery. But anyway, whoever was talking about him said, this guy's crazy. He got kicked out of a game, and when we all went outside after, he beat the guy's car with a baseball bat, all the windows, the windshield, and everything. And they knew it was him because he got kicked out. He went and dressed, and he left.
Yeah, he spent time.
And I will say this about him. He was so nice to me when he was here.
Yeah.
But there was a play where we were playing Scranton, and we had Steve McLaren, mm-hmm. and Woody was tough.
Oh, yeah, real
and
tough.
Billy was tough, but I don't think he wanted to fight Stone Cold. Anyway, there's a scrum, right? And Billy comes in late, and he's swinging at Woody because he knew he couldn't get to him, right? So there's this big melee. So I walk up. I got his gloves and his stick, and I'm coming up behind Woody real quick just to put him in the room. Well, here comes Billy up the other side. Now, this is in the spectrum, which you know well.
Yeah.
It's that gate, the Homer gate. Everybody says Homer was the reason they put that in there. Anyway, Woody looks down, and he goes, I'm gonna fucking kill you or something. Yeah, fuck you, Tibbetts. And Billy grabs those things. And he's like, I'm gonna kill you and your wife.
Oh, jeez.
Like, and he looked like
he should be locked up.
I'm like, yeah. It was like for real. And Woody's like, he's walking. He goes, fuck you. And as soon as we stepped in the room, Woody goes, he sounded serious.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he did sound serious, man.
Well, the reason I ask you about Tibbetts is because I saw him in Hershey, and he was with Pittsburgh. He'd been released from prison, and he's on a tryout with the Penguins.
Yep.
And my son-in-law, Harry Dumas,
yep.
is refereeing the game with me. And so... Matthew Barnaby was playing for Pittsburgh at the time.
Oh, boy.
So Harry calls an obvious penalty on Tibbetts for tripping or something, and Harry's going to the penalty box, and this Tibbetts guy is like, charging.
Oh, boy.
So I stepped in front of him with the stop sign, and Barney's over on the bench yelling, Fraze, get out of his way! He's freaking crazy!
Come on!
Come on!
So he bypasses me, gets in, he sits in the box, and I opened the door, and I said, listen, kid, I said, I just want you to know that when you take an obvious penalty like that, like, there's no question, just go sit down. He said, and he's the Boston guy, right?
Yeah.
He said, I know who you are, you old fucking prick. He said, you got ugly hair, too.
No way. Right to the heart, right to the heart.
I started laughing. So this is the last game before they break camp, right? They're
going
to either make it or send you down. So at the end, with a couple of minutes left, he decides he wants to have a fight with the guy to try and impress, you know, the brass. And you'll love this. He engages this guy, he drops his gloves, and he does the crane. And he goes, whoa!
No way.
And the guy just smokes him. One shot, he's down, he's on top of him. So he's laying on the linesman.
Daniel LaRusso.
The linesman break it up, and I went over, and he's still laying on the ground. I said, "Hey, Billy the Kid, you know what? I think you can lose the crane move. And if you're going to shoot your mouth off, you better be tougher than that."
Wow.
But I got along with the guy great.
Yeah.
So, you know, when he was with the Flyers and I chat him up, I always wanted to get these guys on my side.
Right.
And so we had some things. And I'd sort of coach him on the ice, like, "Hey, keep it going. You're doing good. You know, you can see guys are nervous." And,
yeah.
But I'd look in players' eyes, and I'd see.
Oh, yeah.
I knew who they were.
Imagine.
Mike Danton.
Oh, yeah.
He changed his name, remember?
Yeah,
his
Jefferson, name was, right? Yeah.
Jefferson. Yeah. Very first face-off in the preseason. Everybody wants to kill this guy. He scores a really nice goal, and he came back for the face-off, and I said, "Hey, kid," I said, that was really a nice play. Keep it up.
Yeah.
You're going to make this team." And he looked at me with those spooky eyes, and he said, "You serious?" I said, "Yeah, serious. Great play." He said, "You know, I've never had a referee compliment me, ever."
Hmm. Yeah, so I guess not.
You just knew there was something
back there. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I do remember him. It's funny. I actually remember way back when he changed his name.
Yeah.
What did he change to? Danton Cole?
It was Jefferson, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Jefferson, and he changed it to Danton.
Danton, yeah, that's what it was.
And he had David Frost as his agent,
right,
who he tried to get hire somebody to kill him.
Yep, that's right.
There was stuff going on.
Yeah, there was a lot of... Yeah. It was sad, but I just remember when he came back with a name change. I think we were playing the Devils in a preseason, and I just remember watching him skate. You know how it is. You've seen all these players. You can pick them out who they are. And I'm like, he looks – I swear to God, that's Jefferson, right. You know?
Yeah.
And guys are like, I don't know. I'm like, it's twin or it's him. And then we hear a little bit later in the day that, oh, yeah, that was. He changed his name and blah, blah, blah. But that's funny you brought that. That guy was crazy. He was a pretty good player, too.
Oh, he was.
He was a good little player.
Well, even Billy, going back to Billy, what was the story about when the Flyers released him? Didn't they escort him out of the building?
Yeah, Fridge. They had to call Fridge over to the rink. Because he was coming after Clarkie. He was banging on the doors down there.
I'm like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. I was at the other end. I'm like, I'm out of here, man.
Clarkie have a stick in his hand?
Yeah, he was upstairs. He wasn't down there.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. What an organization. You know, I always loved the Flyers organization. They were class.
Mm-hmm.
And it came from the guy
right there.
100%.
Mr. Snyder. He had such passion. He was an intense guy, and he didn't hold back. I mean, if he thought we screwed up, boy, he was down there yelling and screaming at us. But I always felt that he was fair, and I respected how much he loved his players. They were his boys.
Oh my God, they were.
I'll tell you, it's a far cry with the organization now. I don't like to knock anybody, but I'll tell you, Mr. Snyder would not have been putting up with some of the stuff that.
That's the truth. 100%. Yeah, that's the truth. Just lost the culture, right? Not so much like the Broad Street Bullies, but just the essence of like identity and, you know, just standing for something that the Flyers always did.
See, that's where the Montreal Canadiens are one of the finest organizations in the game. And they had an awful year this year. They were at the Cup final year before.
Yeah. Right.
It comes and goes, but the tradition should always hold true. The Flyer organization, the history, you should be proud to be drafted and come into that dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I go into the Montreal dressing room and I see that sign with all the old legends around, Rocket Richard and Geoffrion.
It's amazing.
And that sign that says, "From these failing hands, we pass the torch." You know, it's interesting. You talk about respect and tradition, and players don't seem to have that same kind of respect today that you guys had. But... I talked to Stéphane Richer at an event one time, and Steph said, I was drafted first Montreal. I'm a Montreal kid. I'm so proud to have the Canadian jersey, my name on the back and a number. He said, very first practice, I throw my jersey in the hamper, and Larry Robinson got up. He walked over, went to the hamper, took my jersey out, turned it over. He said, "Steph, we play for the crest on the front. Not the name on the back." So he goes. They go to do a preseason game in Edmonton, and he ran Lee Foglin, who was the captain of the Oilers at the time. He ran him from behind the net. Foglin turned around. They fought. Steph said, I'm coming back after serving my 5 minutes. And he said, I did okay in the fight. I thought I'd get some high fives. No. Larry Robinson, again, he said, Steph, when you see the guy's numbers, you don't hit him. Play off him. He said, you want respect? You got to respect your opponent.
Hmm. Wow, how true
those
is that?
History lessons from guys in that organization, yeah. You know,
yes.
As a rookie, they can be really important lessons.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Larry Robinson, I've never heard a bad word about
man. Oh, what an awesome guy.
I've met him a few times, too. Just the nicest man.
Yeah,
yeah, no doubt.
I got a question for you. When I ask you this, I don't mean scared, like, oh, this guy's going to grab me. But maybe there was a situation where you thought of. But was there any player? Yeah, was there any player that you were just like, let's just try to keep away from this guy? You know, like, cause we always joked about Chris Pronger. I've never seen a guy get away with more yelling at a ref and telling him to fuck off and this and that. And used to say to Riles, I think they're afraid of him. But I know you weren't really afraid of him, but guys on the other team were afraid of that stick.
Yeah, right.
Stick just coming. Dirty and, you know, his bark was loud, but I just wondered.
Well, when Prongs was in St. Louis and whenever they got a penalty and he came out to kill it, he thought he could do anything. And he had the heavy cross.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Big time. Strong, big guy, good, great player. And I would give him a second penalty. And we argued and argued and argued until finally he recognized, I don't allow a second freaking thing to go. Just because you've got one, that doesn't mean you can't get two.
Right.
And I've called three penalties on one play on the same guy. Did one, did two, did three. Boom, the meter's running.
Wow.
But I'll tell you, 1974-75, I'm working in the American Hockey League game in Halifax. The year before, Montreal Canadiens won the Stanley Cup, and they fired Al McNeil as their coach, and he was coaching Halifax, which was shared with the Atlanta Flames. I played junior a couple of years previously with Ken Houston, massive guy, 6 foot like four. He was easy at 225, 230 player, and so he's on the bench. There was a guy named Richard Lemieux that was traded from Vancouver. He was on a one-way deal, and he was traded to Atlanta. They sent him down to Halifax. He was not a happy guy. He got three penalties in the first period. McNeil benched him in the second period. He came out for the third. First shift, he takes another penalty. He's at center ice, and I'm standing with my back in front of the Halifax bench. He kicked his stick over at me. And it hit my skate. Now he's got another one. Wow. I knew I had to get away from the stick, so I turned to skate, but I'm keeping an eye on him. And I just turned, and he threw down both gloves, and he's charging me.
Oh, no way.
The line, one linesman was going to get the puck. The other guy's gone to the faceoff spot, and this guy's coming. No gloves. I open both palms. Like, this means peace, right?
Yeah.
And I'm also ready to defend. He threw the first one, a left. It came over my shoulder. I grabbed onto his wrist. The next one, he had a one to throw. I caught it in the air. I pulled his jersey over his head. No tie downs back then.
Right.
So I got him with both arms up over his head. Ken Houston thinks now I'm going to smoke his guy. He jumped over the boards. He picked me up. My feet are like this high off the ice. And he's got me arms pinned and my face right there.
Oh, no.
So the linesman finally got there just as Lemieux was getting unbuttoned from the jersey I tie up. End of the game. I threw him out of the game, obviously. End of the game, three guys knocked on the door. It was McNeil, Ken Houston, and Lemieux. Apologized. The guy's white as a ghost. Al said, he's a good guy. He's just frustrated. He sent down. I said, listen, boys, no problem. I said, thank God you didn't get me, but I have to write a report. Clarence Campbell was the president of the NHL back then. Mr. Campbell was a prosecutor for the Canadian Army in the Nuremberg trials. Hmm. He wanted detailed reports. He wanted them handwritten. And so I wrote my report. Mr. Campbell, in his edict, said to Richard Lemieux, Mr. Lemieux, you are most fortunate that referee Fraser had the wherewithal to appropriately defend himself. Had you made good on your assault, you would have been suspended from the National Hockey League for life and all affiliated leagues. He fined him $10,000. He was on an $80,000 one way. $10,000, and he suspended him 10 games.
No shit, wow.
Well, which he should have, right? Yeah. That was a lot, right, back then?
Oh, that's a lot.
So, yeah. Was I afraid? No. But I was able to defend, and I never took my eyes off players. I knew that, You know, some guys just don't want to. They want to look at a dog that's attacking. I want to confront it.
Yeah, right.
But not an aggressive way.
Yeah, right.
I always wanted to bring things down, bring the temperature down. Rick Tocchet, great player, young captain of the Flyers.
Yeah.
And Toc could fight. He was a power forward. He could score. He was a great leader. Guys respected him. And he was getting a whole bunch of misconduct penalties because he was so emotional. And he'd be yapping at the refs. Game in the Spectrum. He came over to me screaming and yelling. I went, whoa, Rick, please, let me have a word. I said, listen, you're a great player. You can fight. You can score. You can do it all. You guys respect you. You're a great leader. But you can't do it from that penalty box that you're spending way too much time in with 10-minute talking penalties. Now, I want you to play the game. That's where you're most effective. And I said, if you have a question, please come and ask me. I'll give you an answer. But do it appropriately.
Right.
And I could see Toc's light go on. And it was like, yeah. And I finished up by saying, you can only have to play against the guys in the other jerseys. Don't play against two teams at once.
Yeah,
that's true.
So those are the kind of conversations that you can have in a short spurt with coaches and with players that sort of reset the table and develop a relationship.
Right? Yeah.
Ken Hitchcock, right? You might have even been on the bench. So we were in the two-referee system, and Hitch was mad at my young French referee. Stoppage, a commercial. Commercial stoppage and the timeout. And Hitch goes, Kerry, get over here.
Or, Kerry, get the fuck over here.
Right. Yeah. So that's a better. Yeah, right. Definitely. So I go over. I said, what's up, Hitch?
You go tell us. Fucking no good.
I said, whoa, Hitch. I said, I'm offended by that kind of language. Hitch goes, I'm sorry. He said,
sorry.
Let me try again. You go tell that no good fucking.
I said, okay, we're done. All the players are laughing.
Of course.
So Frenchie over at the referee's crease, he says, what did he want?
What did he want?
I said, I think maybe he's upset with me, but you should stay over on this side and I'll work that side.
That's great. Oh, looking man. After your young refs. That's great.
Yeah. Mike Keenan. I buy Mike Keenan.
Oh, I can't imagine.
We were going to
so
ask
I buy. I'm sorry I'm talking way too much.
No, it's beautiful. Fact, that's why we want you here.
I'm leading you
guys. We don't even have to ask you the questions.
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
So
perfect.
We moved down in 88. I do a search the year before. Six kids at the time. Number seven born 2 years after we get down here. And we're looking at different markets. I love Boston. I love the city, but it was too far out. I talked to Joe Cadillac, and Joey gave me information, and all the Flyer players that either retired or were traded away settled here after their careers.
Yeah.
It spoke volumes for the hockey community, you know, the fan base and the whole deal. And plus, if I drew a radius around each NHL team, Philly had more cities within 150 miles that I could drive to and go home at night.
Yeah.
So it was great. Keenan got fired. 88, house on the market, motivated seller. Perfect house. Oh,
there we go.
All my neighbors were Flyer guys.
Yeah.
And it was perfect, so I bought it. Now, John Ziegler was the president of the league. He didn't really think I should have bought a coach's house, but nonetheless, we got through that little argument. And Keenan went from Chicago, New York, won the cup, St. Louis for a bit. Now he's in Boston. And we're in the two-referee system. And he is just beating up my young referee partner at a stoppage of play. I'm the back ref, and I have to go do a line change. So I went over to Keenan at the bench, get right in front of him, stuck my finger in his face. I said, Mike, that fucking house you sold me, the roof's leaking. All the players started laughing. No, Keenan backed up. He went, Kerry, honest, I thought I got it fixed. 2 weeks later, big rainstorm in Voorhees. We had three fireplaces in the place. Water was pouring down the chimneys. I looked, went on the roof, and he had all the black, you know, around the flashing black tar, and it just over time opened up.
Oh.
So I was trying to be funny, get him off my
own. Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
He gave me the real tip. It was leaking.
Wow, that's incredible.
Oh,
we wanted to ask you most controversial call or non-call, or ooh, top, maybe top
easy.
Two. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
easy. The one I missed in 93 in the Western Conference Final.
Gretzky?
Gretzky and Gilmore. And, you know, I'm still asked about it. Toronto fans, second, third generation kids that weren't even born then, hate Carey Fraser. You know?
Really?
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah. And you know what? It, in reflection, you don't want to miss something that, or call something that has a negative effect on a game. Now, we don't know if the Oilers, or I'm sorry, the Kings would have won that game. But we know one thing for sure. Had I seen it, Wayne Gretzky wouldn't have been in the game to score the winning goal on the next series of play.
Yeah.
So, and they lost game 7, and Wayne had the best game he admitted of his career back in Toronto for game 7. Wendell Clark said, hey, if you had asked us, we want game 7 in our own building? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
But they just hit a guy that was incredible and took it over.
Right.
But, I came home from that L.A. game, and I still hadn't seen a replay. Brian Lewis was the referee in chief. He was there. He said, well, we haven't seen a replay either, but there's been a report that maybe he clipped him with a high stick. I went to Doug Gilmore at the time. He's dabbing his chin that's bleeding. I said, Killer, tell me, what happened? I didn't see it. He said, well, Wayne took a shot, and his follow-through hit me in the chin, the stick. I said, well, that's not a penalty. He said, okay. It didn't smell right. Wayne was always a guy that if there was something that needed to be talked about, he was right there pleading his case. And he was kind of slinking away.
Yeah.
And I thought, this smells bad. So I get both linesmen in. I said, help me out, guys. Anybody see anything? Ron Finn was at the blue line. Huck Finn had the balls of an elephant. If he saw something, he'd tell you.
Yeah.
And Kevin Collins had dropped the puck at the faceoff. And he was doing the tap dance. He said, I don't know. If he did, man, maybe. But if he was bent over, I'm not sure. As soon as I hear that, there's no way I'm going to make a guess.
Yeah.
You can't guess.
You can.
Whenever I guess, it's always wrong.
Yeah.
So I had to eat it. And sure enough, the very next play, they're still killing Glenn Anderson's penalty for trying to run Rob Blake's head through the boards in overtime and with a couple of seconds left. So they got four guys on the ice killing the penalty. Three guys went into the corner against two, and Luke Robitaille was one of them and came out with the puck. And Gretzky standing all alone on the far side, one defender, it's in the net, game over.
Yeah.
So, I look at that, and it's the worst call I missed and never made.
Yeah. I actually watched the replay yesterday a few times. And that's a tough call, man, especially from where you were standing.
Exactly.
So one of the replays, you almost couldn't tell because I think Gretzky takes a slap shot and gets blocked. It almost looks like
Jamie McCowan blocked the shot. It came back to
it. It almost looked like it might have hit him on the blockage.
Right.
It wasn't even so much the stick.
Yeah.
Then from the other angle, you could maybe see, I think it's after he follows through, he brings his stick back and maybe make.
Correct.
Glimpson, but that's a tough call. The other thing is that
Wayne was on the board side of Gilmore. I was on the far side, so I'm looking
right
through Gilmore.
Oh, yeah.
Wayne is on the other side, and his reach
right
catches him, and I don't see it.
Yeah.
So it happens.
Yeah, it's yes. Yeah,
it's not rocket science. Now we've got replay after video review
right
after, and guys, I wanted to see everything.
Yeah.
When I started, one referee and no replay, and we had goal judges, but I wanted to be in position to make the call. I'm the captain. The ship goes down. It's on me. And now I'm seeing guys that don't have the best vantage point. They don't seem to get to where they need to get to. They're in the way of players.
Mm-hmm.
They're standing in traffic areas.
Yeah.
And they have the safety net of the video review.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So you can turn
different
it over.
Animal completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that was a tough one because it just seemed like such a non-play at the time. It was a power play. I mean, there's nothing really going on.
Anytime you're in OT, man, it's intense. You got to the concentration and the focus. You don't want to miss one.
Right.
Or you don't want to get fooled on one that you think is a penalty and not.
Right.
There's no guesswork in OT for sure. And there shouldn't be at any time.
Right.
But there's times where you have to make an educated decision, judgment. So Matthew Barnaby had, he was a beaut.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a Flyers game and single referee, and I'm chasing the play, and I don't have a real good angle, but I see a guy, D-man, bring the stick up. Barnaby bends over, grabs his face. My arm goes up. logic, maybe.
Right.
He came to me and he's got a broken tooth. He said, he broke my tooth. 4 minutes.
Hmm.
4 days later. And I see he's got this big shiny thing in his mouth, right? The cap. I get a really good angle on this play. Guy's stick is at his waist. Barney bends over, grabs his face, pulls out the cap.
Oh, my God.
He skated over to me and said, look, he broke my tooth. I said, you prick. Yeah. I said, no. I was the ref
the other
last
day,
time
idiot.
That you pulled the thing on. He said, oh, fuck, I forgot it was you.
No
stuck
way.
The cap back in. I said, you dirtbag.
Oh, man, it oh, sounds man. Like something.
You're not cheating, you're not trying, right?
Yeah, I know, right?
That's... Well, Murray Craven one time playing for you guys, he was on a break, and I could see him chomping on his lip, just biting away. And the guy, you know, the defender was chasing him, and he makes the play at the net. And he came over, and look, he cut me. I said, you
bit
Muzz.
Yourself.
I said, Muzz, you bit yourself.
Exactly, Muzz.
Oh, shit. I didn't think you could see that.
Oh, man.
I got a question for you. What number did you wear before you got number two?
Never. Had my name on the back.
It was just the names.
Yeah.
All I was right. wondering about that.
Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about the names.
Yeah.
And they took the names away? Why? So.
Well, we had our strike in 93, and Mr. Bettman, we beat him up a little bit in the media. And he, the start of that next season, he said there was going to be no more names on the back. And he gave us the reasoning that I want to take the pressure off you guys. So we're going to go to numbers. So the fans don't chant your name. Okay.
Like they can't.
Yeah. Right.
So here's what happened. Now we go into the two referee system. Nobody knows the other guy's name. I'm wearing number two, right? And the guy'd make a call, Buddy'd make the call, and it'd be Fraser sucks. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
Come on, ref.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, I thought I should change my name to Fraser Sucks at one point.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, I celebrate Mother's Day. I was called it so many times.
Mother. Oh, that's great. I got a question for you that people probably want to know or don't know. Like, so if you're in a game and you guys, especially in the playoffs, is there someone that represents the ref that's there? So you could go in between periods almost like a coach coming in and get shit or...
No, they stay away.
They do? Okay.
But we do have a series supervisor. And they're executives, sometimes from the officiating department, but hockey operations has really taken over the control. So you've got Colin Campbell and Mike Murphy and former players, Chris King. So they tend to referee the game from either in Toronto or as a series supervisor. We get prepared in a pregame meeting the night before. Before dinner, typically, so we have our game day to ourselves. But the series supervisor will go over previous games, what they did, bring forth any kind of information that we need to be aware of, line matchups, if somebody's done some nasties.
Well played.
Yeah.
That we need to be aware of. What can happen, though, is the general managers and the coaches, they have a cooling-off period after a game. One day of cooling off, you can't contact the series supervisor. But the next day, they will. So they can try and program that supervisor to bring some stuff into the dressing room.
Okay.
Might be on face-offs. And they'll say, you know, so-and-so, Claude Giroux is cheating all the time on the face-offs. And we need to make sure your guys take care of that. Subliminally. The guys go in and say, you know, there was a complaint about Claude Giroux. Make sure he's lined up and he's got a stick down because he's timing it.
He wins a lot of faceoffs.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So really that guy, I would take a lot of stuff with a grain of salt. It's not that, you know, I wanted to be disrespectful to the coaches that we have. But I don't want to pre-referee a game.
Yeah, right.
I always wanted to drop the puck like a flower, let it unfold. Mm-hmm. The players are going to dictate to me what I need to do. Yeah. Ideally, I would like them to just play. And one of the things that I always did, and especially with a two-referee system, I would say to the young guy, listen, we've got this matchup tonight. If they start out hard, and even if there's a little bit of a run, let's let them play it out As long as the guy keeps his elbows and his stick down and delivers a good hit, even if it's a bit of a longer run, let's let it play out. And the other thing, let's try not to blow the whistle too fast.
Yeah.
If I can get a three-minute run with no whistles at the start of a game, guys are changing on the fly after their 30 to 40-second shifts. Everybody gets in the game. They take their checks. They give their checks. And as soon as the whistle blows, it's an opportunity for a scrum. Right.
Yep.
So that sets the tone. It can enhance the flow of the game right off the bat, and it really works, I think, to the advantage of the game and the fans.
For sure, yeah. I could speak to that, being a fourth-line guy. If there was too many stoppages in that first run or a penalty, I'll be like, here it comes, penalty the first three shifts, and then I don't get a shift until, obviously the penalty's killed, and then they go through the lineup, one through three again, So I'm just like crossing my fingers, please don't call a penalty.
Well, to that, Kerry, talking about scrums, which they've been talking about a lot on TV. So you played growing up, you were on the, tougher side of the game, and how did you feel about scrums? Because I felt like, obviously I wasn't playing, but I kind of liked when these guys, especially in a playoff series, as long as nothing dumb's happening, I get you guys don't want to be there all night going, hey, boys, all right, break it up. But, I felt like the other night in that Florida-Tampa game, it was like a preseason game because neither team wanted to kind of get involved in that. I heard their Florida's coach say, last year we were too emotional. Well, it's an emotional game.
Yeah.
And I feel like the other night that game just kind of got away from Florida because they had no, that there's anyone,
no energy,
fighting.
No confrontation.
I don't mean fighting. I just mean
confrontation, right?
Perry's going to piss everyone off on the ice. So is Maroon, big rig. But I just felt like there was nothing in there. I mean, how did you feel about the scrums and that?
I think they're a waste of time. And I like guys to play fast, play hard. That's what brings out the excitement and the energy in a game and even the confrontation. A scrum is just yapping at one another.
Right.
It does nothing. So I would after the first or second scrum, I put it back on the coaches. I would go to the coach on each bench and I'd say, I'll tell you what, I'm done with the scrums. I want you to play. If you don't take care of your guys, I'm going to call a penalty. It might be on your guys, and I'm going to go have the same conversation with the other guy. It might be his team. I'm only going to pick one. We're not going, even up here. So control them. And often, 99% of the time, the coach would say, you heard him, guys.
Right.
I said,
I've heard. Yeah.
Play
I've heard
until you hear a whistle.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then stop.
Yeah.
I think
I've heard that a thousand times.
Heard you
times.
Say that. During a game before. Yeah, for
hard,
sure.
Hard to do, right? You hear it come out of the ref's mouth and be like, okay, well, that sounds like a simple concept, but then, in the moment,
Well, I was going to say, it's an emotional thing, and you had that in your mind, too, so I feel like it's got to be hard, especially in your 3-3, you're in a game 7, God, you ref 12 finals, right?
Yeah.
The amount of pressure even on you guys in a finals, it has to be huge.
Yeah, especially when it's OT, close,
right.
Close game. My last one, or not my last one, but the one that I often remember is when Ray Bourque won the Cup in Colorado, Game 7 against the Devils. And sitting there in the penalty box when all the stuff was going on in the presentation, to be part of it after run through the playoffs, just like for us, for you guys, you want to be there and see it and feel it. And you've contributed in some way to it over the course of the playoffs. And so when Joe Sakic got that cup and handed it to Ray Bourque immediately, it was like, wow, what a class. What a class
moment. It's an amazing moment.
Yeah. So those are the kind of things you remember over the course of your career. And I remember so much about situations that would happen when I see a guy and like Jim McKenzie and the bizarre kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a gift. Our careers, guys, were a gift.
Yes, 100%.
We love what we did, and we got an opportunity to be at the best level and did a lot of amazing things.
Yeah, right. Agreed. It's a blessing for sure. Yeah. We got to ask you, we have you in the studio here, talk about your legendary hair. And
how do you not have a deal?
Yeah.
With a shampoo, right. With a mousse,
L'Oreal.
With something.
I know. I use Paul Mitchell Friesenshine, and for the hard days.
Write that down, baller.
Freezing shine.
So the old Buffalo Auditorium, okay? We used to walk right out of the dressing room and yeah. into the crowd, right?
Yeah.
No security, nothing. So Boston beats the Sabres 1-0 in this playoff game. Nothing really happened, I thought, controversial at all. And I walk out, and here's this lady right in my face. She said, "Kerry, I got a question for you." I thought, oh, shit, here it goes, right?
Here we go.
So I dropped my bag. I said, "Yes, ma'am, what is it?" She said, "You skate up and down the ice 100 miles an hour. Your hair never moves." She said, "I got a real problem here. What's your secret?" I said, "Paul Mitchell Freeze and Shine for the windy days." She said, "Great, I'm going to go buy a case of it."
That's awesome.
Oh, Freeze and Shine for the windy days.
Yeah, right? How mad were you when they made you go to the helmet?
Well, it's a funny story. So I'm negotiating with our executive, the last CBA I worked under. I got our lawyer sitting beside me. First meeting is in New York in the boardroom. Bill Daly, deputy commissioner, great guy. I love Bill. He slid their first proposal to our lawyer beside me with the exception of the last page. Slides it over to me. I look at it. Oh. It says, "All referees or all officials, regardless of tenure, during the course of this collective bargaining agreement will wear a helmet and a visor." I ripped the page in half. I slid it back. I said, "Non-negotiable." Shows what kind of a negotiator I am.
Yeah, right.
I started the season with a helmet.
Yes, you did.
But
yes,
there was only two of us that didn't wear a helmet at that time. So you're not going to win that one.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, that's true. We used to have said this before. We had Mac T. I think he might have been the last.
He was,
player.
Yeah.
And I used to love, I mean, I was young. It was one of my first 2 years in hockey. And we used to send a stick boy, "Oh, hey, can you go grab 14's helmet?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking yeah, be like, "You fucking asshole." That's Craig McTavish.
Oh, man.
We did it all
That's
the time.
Great.
It always
well, turn. You know, the thing of it is, and I talked to Mac T and Gretzky, he wore that little Joffa.
Yeah. Yeah.
This sounds crazy, the way the game is fast and pucks moving and 100 mile an hour plus slap shots. I felt that I was more alert, more aware when I wasn't protected. Literally. I could see a puck come in slow motion. I was really dialed into all of my senses. A shot had come, and I just slip it a little bit. And it, so I'm in Boston, and a guy from Strathroy, Ontario, was built a chest protector, a flak jacket, that he wanted me to test. He said, "You can it disperses the energy. You could take one." I said, "Okay, I'll try it." So I'm in Boston, and Sean O'Donnell was on the blue line for the Bruins on a power play. He steps over the red line, and I'm backing in, leading the play in the two-ref system inside the blue line, and he pounds a cross-ice slap shot. And it's coming, and I'm about top of the circle. And he's going to do an end-around with the pound in. So I think, this one looks pretty good. It's maybe 90, 95 miles an hour slap shot. It's coming. It's a good height. I square it up. I'm going to take it in the chest just to give it a try. Duh.
Oh.
So all of a sudden, and this is... What, 3 seconds? No, it wouldn't be even 3 seconds. It's a second and a half maybe to get from the red line to me on a 90-mile-an-hour slap shot. So it's coming, and now it's starting to rise a little bit, and it's coming up, and I'm on my toes a bit, and I go, oh, no, too high, too hard. I hit the deck. It brushes my hair, and Jack Edwards, the play-by-play for Boston, Jack goes, "And down goes Frazier."
Yeah,
and Gordy Kluzak's the color guy.
That would be him,
he
too,
says,
to say that.
"Not a hair out of place."
Yeah. Not a hair out of place.
But I saw that puck coming slow. Honest to God, it was like, okay, I'll take this one.
Oof.
That's incredible. Well, was there a story as it pertains to that first year you wore a helmet? Did you get hurt?
Well, I shattered my big toe. Our daughter, Jamie, a lawyer, was doing research, undergrad in marine biology. She was up doing whale research in Bar Harbor, Maine. And so she came back home, and she's going to start law school, and she had this big TV. And I'd had knee surgery that summer. So I'm carrying this big old TV down the stairs, and my left knee kind of gave out a little bit, and now I'm going down.
Oh, no.
And I've got this heavy freaking TV, and I'm saving it as I'm going down the steps, but I jam my right foot down to grab a step. I had no shoes on. Shattered the big toe. So I'm bouncing down. I save the TV, and I look at my toe as I'm laying there, and it's going this way. So I call my wife, Kathy, down. I said, "Kath, I just dislocated my toe." I said, "Pull it." She said, "I'm not pulling that thing."
I'm pulling.
So Harry Dumas, who's got, he's a EMT at the time, or trained in it, and he said, no, no, you don't want to pull that. So they took me in. The whole joint was shattered. There were shards. So thank God it wasn't pulled. It might have come off in their hand. So I missed the start of the season, and that was when I had to first wear a helmet. So TSN did a funny spoof on Where's Carey Fraser?
Because that's pretty good.
And we shot around Philly. I went over and talked to Simone Gagné on this spoof. It's really funny. It's you can
find that ball.
Google it out. Funny, where's referee Carey Fraser?
All around, you're afraid to wear the helmet.
Exactly.
So good. That's amazing.
So funny.
Well, anything else you want to plug before we let you go? I know you're a busy man. You got to get rocking.
Well, this health issue that I have is a blood cancer. And as it turned out, the two Flyer equipment and trainer, or two athletic trainers, have developed the same sort of thing. It's called an MPN, and it's a mutant gene that develops in your bone marrow and causes your platelet count to just continue to build and build and build. Typically happens to people over 50. Women are very susceptible to this. So it can be diagnosed with a simple blood test, and they can be controlled. I could have died with the platelets collect, create a clot. They go to your heart or your brain, and you're done. So it's no joke. If you don't feel good, if your balance is off a little bit, there's all kinds of symptoms. Just get a blood test, and that'll detect it. And there's medication you can take. I take 9 chemo pills a week, and I have for 4 years. And my platelet count is now in to below high range of normal. So
yeah, I remember us. We were playing in Montreal. Carey, you were there doing one of your special ref in a game, and it was funny because I came out in the afternoon and I see him walking. I'm like, whoa, wait, hey, game ain't started yet. No. This game, this alumni type game.
Fantasy camp.
Fantasy camp. And we stood there and talked for a few minutes, and that was the first time I knew that he had this situation going on. But, it's a scary situation going on for you and Sal and Jimmy, and we spoke about it a few weeks ago. I obviously pray for everyone
in that situation. The good news is, they can control it, but you have to be diagnosed with it.
Yeah, right. And a simple blood test, right? I mean, exactly. It's an easy thing to do.
Yeah. And I was doing a charity event for cancer in Toronto, and they have an outdoor at Woodbine Racetrack. They set up cages for ball hockey, biggest ball hockey thing in the world. And teams the night before, they've raised money over the course of the year, and they get to draft the players that are going to, NHL guys are there. And I was drafted, and the guy said, do you want to coach or do you want to play? I said, coach, are you nuts? And it was like 99 degrees out. It was freaking hot, sun, no clouds. So I'm out there and aggressive. I'm battling this guy, probably 10 years younger than me, in the corner for the ball. I win the battle, bump him off it. I flip it off the cage, boom. Now I'm on a break. I'm running down the concrete parking lot, and I make a pass. We score a goal, and all of a sudden, things were spinning. It was like, I thought I was just dehydrated.
Yeah.
And it was, sure enough, I come home and I was going to get a lipoma, fatty cell taken out of my bicep. And those aren't really biceps. Sorry, Riles.
He doesn't look good either anymore. Here's my deep
I got less
carry.
Biceps than you got, man.
Taken out of the string.
Yeah, right.
So that's when the blood test was done, a pre-op blood test, and my GP said, man, you got to, we got to get you over to a hematologist.
Mm. Wow.
So we end up at Fox Chase Cancer Clinic and tests, and, the guy, the hematologist on the consult, he says, well, we know what you got. It's cancer, blood cancer in the leukemia family. Wife Kathy falls apart.
Oh, God.
And, our mentality, athletic mentality. I said, okay, doc, what's the prognosis? He said, well, we don't know what the long-term life expectancy is. It's been fairly newly diagnosed. We don't have a cure, but we can try and manage it. I said, okay, you're my captain. You're the captain of this team. I want you to put a team together that we're gonna win this thing. We're gonna be around as long as possible. And so that's what we've done. And
amazing.
All's good stuff.
Anytime you just hear that word, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's
We look great.
Yeah, you look awesome.
You got great energy, and your memory hasn't slipped. So.
No, God, no. I didn't have to take too many in the head. But, right. But I got to tell you, I'm involved with the, it's called CURE, C-U-R-E. You can Google it. And they do amazing things trying to find a cure for this, but also with the patients. And they have taken hikes, the stuff that Jim McCrossin has. They've walked Kilimanjaro, not to the big height, but they take them on these kinds of missions with the doctors they have. And we're going to do one August 7th, 2nd to the 7th, for the MPN blood cancer that I have. We're going to do it in Western Canada.
Oh, awesome.
And
nice.
They have, we got guides. They provide everything for the cancer patients, flights, the whole deal.
Wow.
And we walk to a base camp. I don't know how many miles they do a day. And everything's set up. You're sleeping in tents. The food tent is all set up.
Wow, super cool.
And they do a documentary on it. So I'm excited about being
that's
part of that.
Really oh, that's
cool.
Awesome.
That's really cool.
I might be able to get Sal on it and Jimmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, they both.
Nice support system there too, right? You know?
Just, big time.
Yeah.
Big time.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Which is probably a huge piece of battling.
Well, it
this,
is.
Right?
And, you know, positive energy.
Yeah.
So I was diagnosed. I got a call from Bobby Orr. I got a call from Mark Messier. Mess said to me, Fraze, never give up the fight. Never never stop fighting.
Right.
I said, you got it. There's no option.
Fucking right.
Amazing.
Yeah. But really a pleasure to be with you guys.
Oh,
again.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. I think we could sit here all day.
Yeah, we have to have you come back on for 2.0.
Yeah, we'll definitely get you back on. And I just thought of something, not to put any pressure on you. How cool would it be if he, like, ref the final game of our ball hockey tournament?
Oh, yeah.
Sure, when is it?
No helmet.
Yeah, right.
You don't have to skate or anything. You just have to.
I don't wear a helmet when I do the charity events.
No,
I do a ton of stuff with Hockey Helps the Homeless, and we raised $1 million in Long Island. Adam Graves and Stefan Matteau and Patty LaFontaine, bunch of guys.
Awesome.
Colton Orr.
Oh, yeah. And,
cool.
Orzy.
Yeah, and we. They have a game every, it's Labor Day, every hour for 24 hours. They have a sleep room. I was on the ice like 8-9 hours.
Wow.
Refereeing games. And typically I put a wireless microphone on, I do play-by-play and tell stories while I'm refereeing these games.
Oh,
amazing.
That's
got to
awesome.
Be some gold.
It's a blast.
Yeah.
To reunite with you guys, I tell you, it's just
cool.
So special.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We really appreciate your time.
That,
like I said, we know how busy you are. You got things going everywhere, but we got to play golf this summer too.
For sure. Man. Absolutely.
For sure.
Anytime.
100%.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Thank you
appreciate
so much.
It.
Stay well, boys.
All
you
right. Too.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with 4 questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you got to predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.